Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Admiral Phillips, and joining me in this endeavor into whatever this is the rest of the panel. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Mike the Birdman, and I am the Lieutenant Commander upon this flying garbage scow that somehow isn't Starfleet, but I'm not alone on the bridge of this thing, joined by his own janitorial ship among the stars.
No.
It could be infinitely more interesting than what we're getting right now.
I've been saying, what was it for the last year we've been recording these? What was I saying every single time? Oh, I would love to just be in charge of a garbage ship. I didn't mean for the whole show to become the garbage ship show.
Yes, you got it, though. You got your garbage ship, and it's got a spore drive, and it's driven by idiots.
Every single person on the show has massive psychological and emotional issues.
They deal with none of them unless it's Michael or Giorgio.
No, they don't deal with them. They just... It's the equivalent of watching one of those 1970s talk shows where everybody smiled and clapped and laughed at everything everybody said, even if it was just you could be talking about how horrible your life was and everybody's like, you're so amazing, clapping hands. That's
so we've already jumped into this from garbage scow to an unbelievable pain.
Yeah.
I got to a point where I was not only just trying to watch it and then fast forwarding parts that I thought were boring. I had slouched so far into my seat, I couldn't get out. I was just, I'm dying watching this show.
So if you guys haven't guessed, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 3, which is airing across Netflix, Amazon Prime, Crave in Canada, and multiple places across the world. But it's obviously not the only thing we're going to be talking about here on the show. Just to kind of give you guys an idea, we've been taking the show in chunks so we don't just give you the week by week, blow by blow of what's happening in Star Trek Discovery. We also talk about other things on the show. I know all of us here watch Star Wars' Mandalorian, which if you are watching the latest episode, which is the second to last for this season, featured Bill Burr coming back as his character Mayfield, which is one site described it as Mayfield's arc in that episode was more significant than most of the sequel trilogy. And I can't disagree with that.
Bill Burr has been in a total on-screen time because he had more in this episode.
Yeah.
But maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's a more interesting, likable, and well-fleshed out character than 3 seasons of Discovery of any character.
Yeah, yes, it's kind of amazing. Like Bill Burr's character of Mayfield just has this great emotional arc. You get enough of a info dump from him about his background as an Imperial sharpshooter and how that all kind of led to him watching his unit get destroyed. There was 10,000 people who died
in Space Boston or wherever he's supposed to be from, because he can't shake that accent.
We constantly get told about Discovery, though, that there are characters that are having such amazing story arcs. And
I don't see it.
Well, you know what it is? It's like a CW show, but it's even worse. It's so surface level, but people are attaching their... It's like they're using their imagination to see things that aren't there.
See, I don't know whether I agree with that entirely. And here's what I mean. There are parts of seasons of Discovery I like. There are characters that I like, but I don't care about the A plot. I care more about the B plot. The new character who's the Trill human. I can't remember her name.
Their name.
I really like them. I like their journey with Stamets. I like Tilly. I don't like where she is right now.
I don't
know
why you like Tilly. Well, can you explain why you like Tilly? Because I hate her.
I think the reason I like her
as an actress. I think she's terrible.
I like her as an actress because I think I like not quite vulnerability, but an excitability to it. She brings sort of if I was in Starfleet, I would be really excited to be there, but not over the top, say Wesley Crusher was. But then again, she does have these kind of fangirl moments at times. I like that arc.
What her character is saying the wrong things, screaming and swearing.
Although that being said, and I don't know whether Aaron will agree with me here, because you would be the Star Trek expert out of all of us here. Considering the way she acts, I don't think she'd be an officer.
I think she could be an officer, but she wouldn't generally be that way as an officer. She'd have gone through more training or counseling or therapy to get kind of past that, because I just don't see her as an officer, even an ensign, not acting the way she does. That doesn't mean I hate the way she acts. It's just that she's not officer material, let alone first officer material.
Yeah, like I don't see her in a command position.
She also looks like she's like 20. How in the hell are you the first, like, you're on this like high end, well, prestigious, you know, secretive ship, and you're somehow beating out people that are what,
20, maybe 30 year veterans?
Yes. I don't know if I have a problem with that, because I mean, age might not have anything to do with skill level or competence. But the thing is that Tilly doesn't seem to be confident, or, you know, has the skills that she needs to actually do her job.
Yeah, because
my skin crawls every time she's on screen.
Every time who?
Tilly.
Yeah.
The thing about Tilly that I don't like so far, the fact that she was made first officer, is I don't think she would be responsible if she had to order people to die. And part of command is knowing that your job may require that. And I think part of it is one of those things where it just doesn't work right. And she's just not communicating with her crew that I'm confident enough to lead you. Do you trust me? And I may have to ask you to do the impossible, even the sacrificial things at some point. And I don't see her inspiring confidence in her crew. I see her inspiring confidence to, hey, Tilly, we need to fix such and such a problem on the ship, but not, hey, there's 50 Borg drones over there. I need 30 of you hold the line.
She would fit more in the lower deck show than she does on the crew. Like,
well, she's too uncertain about herself to be in a power of
Remember that they actually had a whole scene in order to prove that she's competent and respected enough to have that position. But she's not. They just had everybody say that she was. They don't show that they feel that way. They just have all been written to be that way. Tilly's never shown that.
I kept saying this was a CW show. It's not. It's a Lifetime or Hallmark Channel show.
Yeah,
it's masquerading as Star Trek.
Yeah, because CW would at least give more plot and make them actually have a reason to hate each other or like each other.
Everything here is either everybody cries every single episode,
and it's not earned. None of the reactions are earned.
Everything is either it's so saccharine or over the top sweet. Everything here is emotions amped to the max and manipulative to the point where there's no logic. It's like the Hallmark or Lifetime Christmas movies or their terrible murder mystery series, where it's like they do like 12 murder mystery movies a year with the same people, and it's the stuff that like only people with cognitive memory issues will like, because they spell the plots out so blatantly. There's nothing left to the imagination, and they try to force you to feel an emotion instead of making you come to that conclusion yourself.
Yeah, everything like about this show doesn't, it just doesn't feel like regular Star Trek. We can go into each episode and what's wrong with in each episode, but I mean, in the previous podcast, we covered just the first four episodes, and there were already problems in those first four episodes.
Yeah,
but the first four were at least somewhat likable. Downhill fast.
The first three, I was saying I liked the direction the show was going. Episode four faltered a little bit. 5, I'm like, whoa, what's happening? And then 6, 7, 8, 9, I felt like just, you know, grabbing my clothes and then just walking into the forest, never coming back, and freezing to death, like I was in The Shining or something.
When I watch,
I just couldn't be around it. I'm so pissed.
When I watch any of these episodes, and I've gone back and I've watched like original series episodes, I've watched some Voyager episodes during this season so far. Like, I've just gone back to kind of cleanse my palate. I've always been able to find at least 1, 2, 3, 4 things in an episode, even like Spock's brain, for God's sakes. And that's an awful episode. I've been able to find like 1 to 4 things that are positive in those episodes where I can go, oh, this was really nice. I have never before come across an episode of Star Trek where I couldn't find something positive, but I finally did with the latest episode, Terra Firma Part 1. Yeah, I think I told you guys online, it's the first time a Star Trek episode has actually made me feel nauseous, like emotionally distraught and physically nauseous from what it was trying to accomplish.
That's the one I had to fast forward through just to see the plot because I hated it so much.
This,
I do that every episode.
This is something that I noticed because I'm more of the casual fan than you three are, and I'm more emotionally invested in certain characters, but this is something I've noticed, especially in the last 4 episodes, because how I do the research for these Future Imperfects is I watch everything at once that day. I let everything marathon, so it's all fresh in my head, and I want to be able to reflect on it in the moment. And the thing is, I don't care about 95% of what's on screen. I find myself more attracted to the side plots and side characters than I am anything that happens on the Michael Burnham show. And I don't like the way that's going on. Like, I know they want to make this an ensemble cast, but they split things up so unevenly where some episodes you'll get a little bit more Reno, you'll get a little bit more Stamets or whatever, but it's always Michael, and her journey to me is never that interesting.
It never was an ensemble show. If you look at even how they worded things,
it was always the Michael Burnham show.
It was going to be her story, her perspective. We want to tell a more personal story from somebody who isn't an established person on the bridge. They talked about that before it started, and we're like, oh, that could be interesting. And then we realized that it's the worst written thing I've ever seen on television. I've never seen a show that has this kind of budget squander it on horrible. You know what it is too? It's bad casting. I feel like if anybody brings up that it's bad acting, bad casting, bad writing, you're just told that you're toxic. And I'm like, but I'm not.
I don't know about bad casting because I like the actress that plays Michael, Sonequa Green, I think it is.
I don't really care for her.
Tell me that they couldn't cast her with a better actress and the show would be marginally better.
I'd be curious to know who else might have been up for the role.
When they tell her to go off the rails, she hams it up too bad. Worse than anything Shatner ever did. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted... Like, this is going back, you know, to the beginning of the season, but I wanted to smash my TV with a hammer when she was acting drunk, in quotes.
Yeah, oh God, that was a little terrible. Yeah, that was over the top. I found that funny, but over the top.
That was Disney Channel bullshit.
I'm surprised they let that through.
See, here's my perspective on it, guys. Like, we've had two full seasons and 9 episodes in the 3rd season. And I finally figured, the acting, it's okay. Some episodes, the actors and actresses do good. Sometimes it's bad. I think the directors, when you can tell the quality of the directors in the show, like when Franks is directing, things are actually generally better. You can tell that there's a quality director behind it. The problem is, and I looked at this in this last episode, in the credits, the opening credits, there are 7 actors listed. How many producers are there listed? 22.
Oh my God. That's a room controlled executively by suits.
This isn't just the case of too many cooks in the kitchen. It's like created by proxy. It's not even, there's no vision. If you look at
there's no vision. There's no vision. There's no ability for anyone to actually, whoever writes the episode, I guarantee you what we see on screen isn't what they wrote. It's been interfered with 100 times because some of these people, some of these writers are actually writers of Star Trek novels. Like you can say whatever you want Star Trek novels are terrible.
And they've been some of the worst episodes, which is what got me. I was like, how are you letting your name, like, why isn't every single episode written by Alan Smithy?
Yeah. Now let me ask you guys this. What are the episodes you guys like so far? I'll give you my top three from what
three are the only ones I like this season.
I like 2 and 3 and the Trill one. Those are my top three.
I like none. I honestly have not liked a single one. I would say like the top rated out of 10 of all of the of this season so far is the second episode, and I gave that 2.5 out of 10.
I think a lot of the problem with this show, as we're kind of discussing right now, there is no unifying vision. And I can't tell you what, I mean, obviously they want to solve the cause of what this burn thing is, which to me, it sounded like it was a lot cooler from the trailers than what we're getting. It's basically the universe ran out of gas, but whatever.
I have a sneaking suspicion, and I said it earlier that we thought like the burn was going to be something that Michael Burnham did. I don't know if it's going to be that. I'm thinking they're going to try to tie this together with the Kelvin universe, and it's going to be Spock going through time, fucked everything up. And
that's something we got to talk about. Someone needs to explain that to me.
I have a feeling they're going to use this as a real fuck you to the old Trek fans and say that the Prime universe and the original movies and the original series is what fucked up this universe.
Okay, so I don't talking about these out of order.
I don't care what happened. That's my problem. I do not care about the burn. It's a meaningless plot contrivance that is ignored. Guess what? It stopped warp travel and it made the Federation fall apart, but our main characters are on a ship that can just completely ignore it. They're going to solve it at the end of the season. So it means that everyone in the 31st through 32nd century Federation for over 160 years since the burn has happened, we're incompetent enough to not be able to fucking solve it. But as soon as a ship from the 23rd century came through, they were the only ones that could figure it out.
You know what? Andromeda, where I kept saying this was like Andromeda. Andromeda was written better, and it was considered the joke of all sci-fi shows. At least in that one, the explanation was it was quite literally the fall of the Roman Empire. Things, you know, basically drifted apart, fell apart through entropy. And it also didn't go, oh, it's been about 100 years. In that one, it was over 1,000 years that things had fallen apart. So it would make sense that people even forgot that it existed. You know, empires, you know, that are that vast and large can fall, and it falls into, you know, distant memories or myths. 100 years in a future where there's very likely people. Well, look, how old was McCoy supposed to be at the beginning of?
Like 130, I think.
Yeah, so he's like 130. People that could literally be. There should be people in this universe alive from before the burn.
Yeah.
Oh, and Vulcans Vulcan's easy.
Yeah. So bullshit on how nobody knows anything that's going on.
And you know, here's the other thing that ties into it. Subspace communications is still fine. They're all okay. So everyone can still communicate with each other. So why did it fall apart? You have replicators. You can have whatever material you need to exist on a planet and continue communicating with everybody. There's no reason for things to fall apart.
And you can't blame this on, they can't say that if they come out and say that this is to do with coronavirus fucking up their plans. No way. Absolutely no way. This was written and they had this planned. They had everything done before anything happened. It's just, it might have affected shooting schedules, but this is the latest victim of what I would call, you know, the bad robot, but also the Lost-itis, which was, look at how they wrote Lost. Everything was MacGuffin, MacGuffin, MacGuffin. The season arcs, where everything was to keep you wondering, like mystery, 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 mystery. We're inching forward to this mystery. And they once they did that and it was successful, every single TV show followed suit because it was lazy. We lost the ability to have one-off episodes, or like they lost the ability to weave a storyline through a season, and then have individual episodes that don't necessarily cater to that. With the exception of like the only show that still does that is like Law and Order, because it's been on for 22 years. But we lost the ability to tell individual good stories every episode. Everything has to be serialized now. Why? You don't need a serialized program when you're binge watching on a streaming platform. People think that you need that. You need that for a mini series. If you're going to do 6 episodes and tell one story arc, okay.
Yeah, then okay. But if you're doing a whole 13, then you don't.
Yeah. Every single season of a show does not have to be a serialized show. And they're doing it because they're lazy, because this means they technically only have to write one episode and then
stretch
it out.
That's just really long. Yeah.
This entire show feels like one long episode.
That could have been 6.
Yes. Or you know what? Why couldn't they have done this whole season as 3 90-minute movies? You could have done the whole thing.
I think that's stretching it. I think that's even stretching it.
I think, yeah.
Out of 9 episodes so far, I honestly think there's maybe 1.5 episodes of material here so far. Maybe.
A movie. A Kurtzman movie.
I think they had a cool idea that was written down. They're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then they worked backwards from that, but they didn't flesh it out. I mean, like
everything they've produced, everything that this team has produced and these producers have produced, it's this show. What was the other one that was popular for a hot minute? Sleepy Hollow, Grimm, all these shows that were like pseudo sci-fi / supernatural. And they always have the same exact plot points. And that's what this is, cookie cutter TV. And they're trying to just shoehorn certain things into it. And there's no reason for the show to exist. It's not fulfilling a purpose anymore. Star Trek always had some purpose. And this is
purposeless.
It's like season 1, we have one plot. Season 2, one plot. So we've gotten nearly 50 episodes. It'll be like 40 episodes or something like that by the end of the season. And we've had the equivalent, if you take out the filler, and we're not talking about...
We've had 4 episodes.
Yeah, without the filler being like character development, there's barely been any of that. You've got maybe what would have accounted for the, like each season is like the TV movie that they used to do in the later seasons of Next Gen, where it would be a double parter. Like that's all we've got. And then they just fill in the rest with
crap.
Meaningless shit. Like it's literally meaningless. The only episodes that had anything interesting involving with them were seasons 2, where they brought in the Enterprise, and that's going to get its own show. But I just hope that they somebody at Paramount goes, hey, you know, we're not like, they can't be getting the viewers. They just can't.
Oh, but if you go online, like I sit online and I'm in like a couple Star Trek Discord servers and things like that. There are people that absolutely love this show and think the characters are so deep and developed, and they gush over the plot. And I'm like, what are you watching?
Yeah, like I don't even want to bother engaging, because even asking the question of what is it that you're saying, not just how do you like them, what do you like about them, and what made you come to that conclusion? People won't answer, or they're skin deep, so shallow they can't give a proper response. And the only reason that they're saying that is they like them because they're the people that watch those Christmas movies, where the Christmas movies music tells you that you're supposed to like it. That's all this is. I don't even like the camera work this season.
No. What's funny is one of the Discord servers I'm on, it's for a Star Trek sim that multiple people write for. And it's infinitely more profound than what we're getting on this. But The people, it's funny because they have a positive and a negative spoiler area for Discovery and Picard and whatever. With this recent one, they were like, this is so deeply, profoundly bad, spectacularly bad, a special level of bad. This is an example how not to write Terrans or Mirror Universe story. And they were talking about, you know, if you're going to do it, don't be dumb. And the fact that, you know, Georgiou's basically wasted, you know, saying, I'm evil, look at me. And they were like, they suggested locking her up to die, that he was like, I'm all for it. I have no reason to like the character.
Well, they even made it cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
Like it's, she's been with this crew for, you know, potentially what, I don't know what timeline is in the show. Wait a minute. Yeah. It's been we've watched 3 years of the show, and hasn't everything taken place over the course of like 2 months?
Less than a year for sure.
Yeah. So Georgiou has been
every day.
She's only been on Discovery since right before the end of season two. And you can maybe say there's been about 3 months where she's been on the ship. And every time you've seen her, every single time, she's insulting. She throws crap on people, like literally like just knocking food onto like Tilly. She laughs about violence. She commits incredible acts of violence. And somehow, and this is the thing that got me physically ill, that you have a character that is the representation of like a fascist dictator in this show, right? She was the empress of the Terran Empire. She ate people. She ate people, okay? She committed genocide on planets. And as she's dying, they're gonna beam her down to a planet to go to this stupid door that might cure her, right? Because first of all,
why ship is so stupid, they see her and go, well, it's the Mirror Universe version of the captain we liked.
Yeah. And okay. then Saru of all people, he knows that she ate Kelpians and insulted him. The last time she saw him, she was insulting him backwards and forwards. And he comes down and refers to her as the Emperor and wishes her good luck. And then Tilly like gives her a hug and says, oh, you know, I've, you know, you've made me a better person. What in the fuck is going wrong with the writing room to get, this would be like me shaking hands with Hitler and saying, good luck, Das Führer. I hope you don't off yourself in the freaking bunker.
Like oh,
I'm serious. This is, it's sickened me.
Where I wanted to turn it off. That's where I fast forward the rest of the episode. Because it got to the point where, like, the writing room, they obviously, it's like they got their contract for the next season and then they just don't care. Like, is it a question of them writing now and then going, this is so bad, let's see if they make it?
Well, this is funny. This quote actually talks about it a little bit from this Discord server. It says, the thing about the Mirror Universe that it's deliberately ridiculous. It's just basic high concept story. What if the heroes are evil? The problem is that it's too simplistic, so you end up with shallow characters rather than characters. That's fine for shameless fun like how TOS and Enterprise did it. But Discovery needed to put actual thought into these stories and characters. Yeah, they're evil. Why are they evil? Discovery just shrugs its shoulders, puts the actors in leather, tells them to choose some scenery, then calls it a success. The whole thing is bizarre. It's not fun, and narratively, it has almost nothing to it. They have a kernel of an idea in the Philip of Michael thing, but they have no idea what to do with it, so they're just flailing around aimlessly.
Not to mention, I have a serious problem with the costumes this season. The Mirror Universe looks like it's like from a spoof movie, from like a Zemeckis spoof movie of Flash Gordon.
Do you know that they actually remade all the costumes for the Mirror Universe this season?
They look worse.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they look worse. And did you also noticed overall this season the general low quality of all the ship effects?
Yeah, and that, the lighting.
That I could argue is twofold. One, from people I know that actually worked on the set, they were told this was the last season. And then the last minute, Paramount came in because of the them shutting down the network and starting up Paramount Plus. So this, I would be surprised if the next season looks a little better, but that's one part of it. The other part is I could see how COVID affected it. So production wise, I can get that the special effects maybe weren't going to be the same quality.
Why? You can do all the special effects from home.
You can if you're competent, but
because if you watch Trek Yards, right? Like there's a YouTube series called Trek Yards. I really like these guys. You know, Samuel Cockings, he's not a professional, but his stuff that he does is 100 times better than what you see in Picard or Discovery.
The ones that re-edited that end battle scene with Picard and had the Enterprise and, you know, all these other ships fly in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looked a whole hell of a lot better.
I think this can also be a case of when Trek was being done with every previous show, the production houses that were working on it were basically dedicated to that program. Same with how Stargate used to do it. They had an effects team. The effects teams that are working on this show, I think, are juggling like 3 or 4 or 5 projects at once. And they're just outsourcing things, lowest common denominator. Like the whole attitude, it seems, of Kurtzman's production team is it good enough to air that we won't get in trouble? Like everything here feels like a first draft. Every episode feels like a pilot. Feels like something you'd retool later on.
Folks, if you can't tell, like we haven't even really talked specifically about any of these episodes because there isn't a lot to talk about that is worth talking about. Right,
feels wrong. It's not me, you know, and you guys. We're not just complaining because we're toxic old fans. Something doesn't feel right about even the look of the show, the sheen of the show. Everything feels kind of plastic looking. Everything, there's no emotion to. Even the cinematography isn't good, and it was sort of new and innovative when it first came out. They tried to, I guess, mimic the movies, but on a lower budget. Something about how you always feel like you're a spectator in the show.
Yes.
So when they're showing like Giorgio getting tested and everything, it always looks like I'm sitting in my room watching on a projected screen. There's nothing in the show that pulls you in to make you feel that you're with the cast or that you're, and it's probably the lighting is a big factor. With everything being so dark, what ship would have everything be so dark and so saturated? Like wouldn't you want bright lights and have everything clean so that you can see what's going on in the ship? Everything seems like you wouldn't be able to get your job done because you wouldn't be able to see where you're going.
See, but there are so many layered problems in this show. And I agree, there's lighting, but it all boils down to you can have shitty plots. You can have poor production. As long as you have characters that are actually well-written, you can even have bad actors. As long as you have good written characters. But there are no characters in the show.
Farscape was, you know, low budget. I mean, it had the Henson puppets, take it or leave it, whether or not you like that style. But that was a show where it was clearly the writing and the acting shone through. Even when they hammed up certain parts in certain episodes and went over the top, it still felt like you were with like the show. You weren't watching a show and something I don't know how
cared.
Like there's going to be a point where people study the show and there's so many things that they're doing wrong. I actually saw them break the line of continuity when they were panning cameras a few times and it didn't look right, and I'm like, what happened? Oh, they're breaking filmmaking 101 rules to break immersion, and they don't even realize they're doing it. So there's we're at a point now where I don't even think it's a directing thing. I think it's just the whole crew is incompetent and they're doing what they think they're supposed to do. But like, there's not a single vision, like you said, for the show. There's not a, who is the guy that's in charge of Mandalorian with, Favreau?
Filoni.
Yeah. There's two people on there. You know, one is basically helping with the art direction, which would be Filoni. And then you've got Favreau as the head honcho producer, and everything has to go through him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are individual producers for individual episodes, but everything has to follow the plan he set forth. And that he's not as hands-off as people think.
Well, the two of them together have created this great program that even something that's 30 minutes long or, you know, 52 minutes long is equally as enjoyable and memorable and not filler.
And you can't tell me, like, and there's people on that show that are not good actors.
but they get great performances with what they're given.
Pedro Pascal is great, obviously, but you've got people, what's her name? Gina Carano. She's not a good actress.
No.
But
she does her physical stuff well.
She's a stunt woman, but she fits. And you know what? It's fine. In fact, the acting's better than some of the Star Wars movies and even the originals. Then you go, say what you will about the Orville, Seth MacFarlane rules that with an iron fist. And every episode starting in season two was consistent once he had Fox out of his hair telling him that it had to be a comedy. And you look at other successful shows, even like Game of Thrones, the reason the last couple seasons, especially the last season, got a lot of flack was there was a point where Warner started to try to interfere and said, well, we've got to wrap it up. We have to have it done. So they had to rush some of the writing out. But the show's look and feel was still consistent. Every episode here feels like it's made by a different person. Like
But you know what I mean?
Like, but every show out there, you watch like Law and Order, it's every episode will have a different director, different crew, different all that, but it still has a consistent look, feel, and tone. And because there's somebody in charge that makes it look and feel that way, whether it be, you know, Dick Wolf or some of these producers, they have a certain feel where you're like, oh, I know it's so-and-so's show because it has that feel. This show doesn't feel like anybody. It feels so scatterbrained. And plot-wise, you know, like we haven't really gone over much, but it's what's really happened.
They have some data about the burn, the Vulcans and the Romulans. No more than what they're letting on.
All of their makeup looks wrong.
Andorians look terrible.
Well, okay. I would think here is where I'm a pretty good litmus test of this. This show, you guys are hardcore Trek fans.
I'm not, I'm really not that hardcore. I am somebody,
you know, way more than me.
I'm somebody, you've seen more episodes than I have.
Which is weird.
I know. I'm somebody, though, that I'm not a hardcore fan. I just want some consistency in my products.
And the point I'm trying to make here is if you asked me to explain this season of Discovery, I can. All I know is it's about the burn, Michael Burnham. They went forward like 1,000 years. Okay. That's all I can really tell you. Oh, and Starfleet sucks, and David Cronenberg's there for some reason.
And she has a boyfriend who has a cat, who in all of the trailers made it seem like they were central to the story, and they're in a total of 3 episodes.
Yeah, and although I will give a plus to one episode where the cat and the Andorian have a scene together, I did have a good laugh.
I love that because it was so dumb.
But
Mike, you're looking at it from a single scene. How did that scene make sense in the show?
All it did is that they tried to pay off something with Detmer, and unless you've stuck with the series the entire time, you don't know that she's a pilot with PTSD.
No, she does not have PTSD.
That's the problem. They say she does, they haven't written her to actually.
Yeah, exactly. They try and tell you that, but they've never shown it. And then she magically just overcomes it, which is great, I guess, but it's not earned.
Well, and that scene with the cat, Mike, it was a very
cheap
Stargate. It was a very Stargate joke that would fit with the tone of Stargate and what they've established in that franchise.
Yes.
It does not fit with Star Trek.
Absolutely. Whatsoever. Completely agree. And that's like we've all talked about. There's no unified vision. There's no unified feel with this. The internal consistency with this series is very off, and it's very off-putting. As I wrote on Facebook today, I'm very disinterested because I don't care about what's going on. And that's, as we've discussed, I am not an old fogey Star Trek fan. I want something exciting. And in the first couple episodes, I was okay, this looks interesting. And the only episode I've liked since then is I like the Trill episode because, okay, that's something different. And I like the episode where they go to the junk planet and scavenge some gear. I thought that was okay. Everything else I didn't like.
The cat scene with the Andorian. Do you know what that character basically was?
What?
Almost the same character that we saw in The Mandalorian. That's the blue dude.
It's the same Horatio Sands or whatever.
Yeah, the same tone, and it fits there. Why? Because it fits that tone, and that it fits in that world. It seems out of place. They're hodgepodging things here left and right. They're pulling. It's almost as if somebody in the writing room is like, you know what, this is a funny scene, but it doesn't fit. Oh, we'll put it in because it made the producer laugh.
Yeah, and that's, you're right. There is no unifying vision. There is no series Bible for how this show should be laid out.
And what I don't like is when somebody brings it up, not just to the fans that are, you know, super, I would say they're toxic by like just dismissing and harping on people that complain. But if you bring up, if a critic brings up something that they didn't like about the episode, which still is kind of rare, I don't know what's going on with the critic media now where this has become an okay TV show. But if they do bring up those that do bring up problems with it, whenever you hear Kurtzman and people talk about it, they come across as smug and then not just dismissive. They're active. It's almost like, it's like Trump. they can do no wrong and it's everybody else's problem and that you just don't get it.
Yeah, that's definitely what I feel that they're doing to the fans on a whole, is trying to make them feel bad for disliking something that actually sucks.
So yeah, like it's I didn't mean to cut you off, Aaron, there earlier, but we're just frustrated.
You're fine. No, I'm very frustrated with the show because I will say I am a super fan of Star Trek, and I've said to you guys like off the podcast, this pains me because Star Trek means a lot to me. I mean, I write for Star Trek. Star Trek I grew up with. It means a hopeful future. It is there to show us what humanity can be and to explore morality that we might not, well, problems with morality that we might have in certain situations or coming up with quandaries that should make us think. You know, how many times have we gone back to episodes that are like, that deal with assisted suicide or racism? And you watch that and you still kind of get chills because you're like, wow, this is an episode that actually made people think or made me think or made me look at a situation in a different way. But you never get that in Discovery or Picard. But you don't have these situations. You don't have episodes that make you think. You have episodes that make you question what the people were thinking when they wrote it.
Yeah, the show's not about making you think anymore. It's about making you feel or else.
It's about action set pieces and a cool idea, but it never goes beyond a cool idea. It's never, this is a cool idea because of whatever. It's not as well thought out narratively as I wanted to. I think some of the strength of the previous Star Trek series, as we just mentioned, it makes you question things. It makes you think. But you also had characters in some ways you could relate to. And here, I don't feel any relation to the characters. And it's not that everybody on the show is bad. I just don't think the writing is strong enough
until
to give them depth.
Until recently when Saru went crazy, almost everybody except for him, I would almost argue, is a bad person. Is there anybody good on the crew that is genuinely good and not selfish or mean or rude to people other than, I guess, Dr. Husband? And even then he's selfish?
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Is there
right.
Anybody that is a genuinely good person on this entire show?
No.
No.
They all hate each other and they're snippy.
Yeah, and I think that's a weakness in writing, because I don't see a lot of interpersonal development. They have moments where it's given during dialogue, and it doesn't always pay off in the way that I want it to. And I think of this scene in particular, because I saw it today. Stamets and Hugh are in bed, and they're having a conversation about the Trill person. And they're saying, well, this person is confiding in me. They're a teenager, but they're a genius. and they're alone, just like I was for a while when they lost someone they love. And Hugh says something along the lines of, does that remind you of anybody? And he's like, I guess that's me. And but say, it took you 3 years to get to this moment where you have a moment of character.
And it's killed with having the camera constantly moving.
Yeah. And that's
How is a show with so much camera movement, so many quick shots, so much constant moving with lights and everything, how can that show be more boring than the static cameras that we used to see in Star Trek? They managed to do it, though. I don't know how they do it, but it's more boring watching when it's constantly moving. You can't, nothing sits in, nothing is able, no emotional moment is ever able to set in because the camera never sits on somebody for more than 2 seconds.
There are a few moments, but they never linger.
You're right. The camera movement constantly takes you out of the scene because you can't sit there and watch the scene and be a part of it because you're constantly moving.
Yeah, like there's one scene, again, referring back to Stamets and the Trill, they start playing music together and he says, and he's playing something, I think it's on the piano or something, and he says, hey, I'm going to show you something in, I think, G minor. It's real easy. And I wanted that scene to just be a few more seconds longer because I think they really could have pulled something out of that. And I think the actor who plays Stamets, I want to say his name is Anthony Rapp, and I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah.
That guy can pull emotion out of a scene when you let him. And Discovery always has him being snippy and sarcastic, which he's fun and funny, and I think it suits his character. But I want to see more of his emotional development with him and the Trill person. And I don't know, just I want more of the emotional stuff, but I want it to be earned. Like I don't feel that
it's too much emotional stuff in this. Like I know what you mean, though. You want heartfelt moments that aren't superficial.
Manipulative. Yeah, exactly. Like I want something that makes sense. And the thing is, as much as this wants to be the Michael Burnham show, I don't care a lot about some of her journey. Some of it I do, but not a lot at all. Saru's stuff, I get some of the uncertainty of being put in command. I get that.
I used to be about Saru. I used to say, give Saru a lot of leeway. But after this last episode,
That was like,
so obviously we're not going to discuss the plots of most of these. We sort of skimmed bits and pieces. We'll talk about the plot, obviously, of this last one. But what I want to say, even more so in how this season has sort of prodded along, and we keep saying that nothing's really happening, for them introducing some really high concepts and big ideas with how the universe is and everything, how can this show still feel so small?
Mm-hmm.
Like do you notice that they're not really going, they go to like the same planets, the same places. It's starting to feel more and more like a sci-fi TV show, like on the sci-fi network, they're hampered by such a low budget.
I think it's episode 5. You get to see a really brief image of a map in the Admiral's briefing room of like where this starbase is compared to like where Earth and Andoria and Tellar and the Ferengi are. And it turns out like 90%, well, almost all these episodes, except for this last one where they jump to the other side of the galaxy, it's all basically taking place 20 light years around Earth.
Seriously?
Well, I'm not joking. Yeah, I'm serious. All like the Emerald Chain is just the Andorians and Orions in a long chain. There's like the Romulan remnant you can see on it. There's the Ferengi trade zone, which is right there. But yeah, it's only about 20 light years, a 20 light year bubble.
Which is what they travel in, what, like a minute?
Well, no. I mean, if you want to get down to it, like at warp 5 in the old TOS scale, that's like maybe 2 months to get across.
Okay. But that's
the old TOS scale. So that's like, you know, in TNG, that's maybe a week. And for 30 seconds,
what about like closer to this would be Enterprise, right? Like Enterprise, didn't they travel farther than that in the first episode?
Yeah. Yes, they did.
Okay. So the other thing before we get into the plot of that last episode leading into, I guess, the two-parter is the biggest problem I have with this entire season is that archive of information, that living archive.
Oh, it's, yeah.
The more I think about it, it's going to be connected. It's going to be the reason the burn happened, or it's going to be evil, or we're going to find something worse. We're going to find that control somehow copied part of itself into the AI of the ship, and that's what caused it. Blah, blah, blah. Regardless, I don't understand how everybody on the ship can be so stupid into thinking that where they spent an entire season fighting evil AI that wanted to wipe out all life on the universe, and they're not only okay with having an AI on their ship, but think it's there to protect them, and they're all smiles and just let it happen.
Yeah, they just kind of dropped that plot element, didn't they?
And but it's not just everybody on the ship that is just, I don't know, everyone in this that's in the show period, all the new Starfleet, the Vulcans, they're all idiots. Like, the only way these plots work is if you don't do basic research.
Well, they also introduced with that AI showing that it was glitching out, right?
Saru was completely okay and with it.
How that was not the immediate plot of the next episode boggles my mind with a show that's supposed to be serialized. How that's just, hey, it's okay. The ship loves us. What do you mean?
Yeah.
The ship loves us. Now we're all going to watch Buster Keaton because the ship loves us. Excuse me? You've got that. It's so bonkers out there. The only person in this entire show that they've shown out of every episode for every season that seems to be competent or know what's going on or is a believable person from any other Trek property ever would be Cronenberg's character, who's been in a total of like 4 minutes of programming.
Oh, but Cronenberg,
I believe he's a secretive.
He just spouted nonsense as well. That just makes no sense.
Of course he spouted nonsense, but his character is a believable character that would exist in, you know, in Trek. You could see him being from some shadowy organization, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Seems to be every other character in the show. I wouldn't believe, I'm waiting for this show to end and just have this whole thing be some horrible acid trip that Barclay had during like holodeck sickness.
I actually talked about a theory that I had that this discovery is all a near death experience from Picard, that he's literally dying and he's dreaming up discovery. He's also dreamed up season one of Picard, but it explains why Spock is so involved, because Spock is kind of in Picard's head. Why like Burnham is the long lost sister to Spock, how Spock ended up saving the universe because of the Kelvin incident, how Spock is still loved on Vulcan because he ended up reunifying the Vulcans and the Romulans in the end. And it explains why there's Discovery shuttles everywhere. It's just Picard making things up as his brain is dying. I honestly think it's just as good of a theory.
They can still retcon it all. They can change things. It's going to make people pissed. It'll make us pissed and everything. But you could do things to appease the continuity. I just don't think they're capable or have the want to do it unless somebody high up at Paramount says, fuck this. We were going to, you know, start from scratch. And they may have to. I don't know how they're maintaining subscriptions. I'm wondering if a lot of the people that are praising it are just pirating episodes. I can't see people spending money for this being the only show. People spend money for The Mandalorian.
Yeah, majority of the guys that are on the Discord server I'm on don't pay for it.
Exactly. They haven't given you a reason to come back week after week to want to, when, you know, if it's so divided right now that there are going to be people that would be interested to see it. They're just going to wait till like the last episode airs, pay for 1 month, $10 and watch all of it. It's not like, this isn't like The Mandalorian where it's become water cooler, like every Friday people have to watch. And so like, let's get into the plot of that last episode and then we can sign off, because I think that it's because of how pissed off we are that we have to explain it. I mean, is this an episode where Q shows up and then I just zoned out, or it's Q, right?
Who knows if it's
he
Q
calls himself Carl.
Yeah.
They're almost pulling on like a Guardian thing, like, here, walk through the door.
And that guy is a veteran actor from all of the Abrams crap, too, by the way. All the TV shows.
Yeah, figures.
He was in the original CSI. He was a main character in the original CSI show.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, not a bad actor himself. If you're going to introduce the concept of the Q, it's not a bad way to do it in here. But,
yeah,
again, ship that has AI intelligence of everything in the known universe of all time forever, wouldn't it, if it loved them, give them a warning?
And wouldn't it have beamed down to the right spot? Because it said they knew exactly where to even beam down, and then suddenly they had to walk for a couple hours.
Like, sort of, for a ship that loves them so much, it should know about Sirius. It's not on scanners, or it doesn't compute. It does not detect. There's nothing here, but it's here. Wouldn't this magical ship AI that knows everything that ever happened in the history of the universe go, probable cause could be, you know, life form of this, blah, 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 similar to the Q, blah, blah, blah. You're telling me the Q's not in this, like, ship's AI that's been collecting data for, like, 1,000 years or more? Or like,
well, as far as I understood, the sphere data was, like, 100,000 years worth of data from the area right around Earth, you know, in the Federation.
The last now, thousand would have known what happened with the Q.
Yeah, but now all of a sudden it has information from the other side of the galaxy as well in it. And now it's like, okay, well, now the computer knows everything. So now we can just solve all the problems in the universe.
But they don't.
But they don't unless they need to for the plot, and then they just do immediately.
How are they not freaking out every second that this unknown entity could be stealing their information and using it nefariously?
Because they're incompetent.
When did Star Trek become, like, Star Trek was always about optimism, not blind ignorance. But yes, so.
But, you know, the new captain of Discovery thanks the Emperor and wishes her good luck. Because, you know, that's optimism, you know.
Because like you said, Heil Hitler.
Yeah. God, it sickens me. Sickens me.
So that episode with Kraft or whatever, the one where it takes place, I can't remember when, but it can't be too far off from where they're at now. The short trek.
I have no idea. The short trek probably, well, I don't know what they're going to have to do with the short trek, because the discovery that show in that short trek is not.
It was in Calypso.
Huh?
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, but it's also, yeah, you said it's a different looking discovery. So, like, obviously they fucked up bad. Because what are they going to do? Strip all the new tech out of this thing and they're going to have a parallel universe version again? Or is this going to be a case of, They wanted to connect it. They still think it's connected, but they still fucked up and didn't realize it. I have a feeling they didn't realize they fucked up by altering the ship.
I have a feeling that you're correct. Because it says in-universe, far future, which if it's, you know, far future, then yeah.
So the idea is somehow they lose all the tech off the ship. Does that sphere orb shit just be like, blah, 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 I'm going to strip all this tech off of here and I'm going to go become V'ger or some shit. There's some sort of garbage with this, but yeah, the plot of this last episode, like we said, is Giorgio is dying. People somehow seem to care and actually don't want it to happen, even though she's done nothing but be violent and actually potentially ruined
and nasty
relationships and with, and like cartoonishly evil, like more evil than like you'd see in a stereotype from Flash Gordon. Then they go down to a planet. She walks through a door by some sort of created by like a Q type entity. and she walks through, and it's like 2001 Space Odyssey. But she like walks into her what she believes to be her like the mirror universe, or her version of what the prime universe should be, and she walks off a shuttle. And am I the only one that noticed that when she walked through, like, it shouldn't you have seen her walking through like an event horizon? She just sort of is there, and there's no more doorway, which is very,
it's all in her head. It's all in her head. Yeah. She's not really there.
Yeah, so she walks off, and then she's like, blah, and they're all like, Heil Hitler, and she's like, yay, and she's like, why am I doing here? Aren't all these people dead, or what's going on? And then she's like, oh, wait, my personality has slightly changed, because they've made me a better person in a couple weeks after I've been eating people and ruling and murdering thousands and millions of people for my entire life.
Okay, and but remember.
And then it leaves on a cliffhanger.
But all when I hear people saying, oh, look at all the character development that's happened with Giorgio. No, wait a second. The two things that they show, that they say, are like, oh, look, she's not wanting to like off Burnham, and that she like saved Saru. Okay, well, wait a second.
But it's always for selfish reasons. There's nothing that she does because she wants to.
Yeah, well, first of all, from season one, we already know that Emperor Giorgio has a soft spot for Burnham, and that's the whole reason there was a fucking rebellion in the first place. So there is no character development there. And then her saving Saru is completely for selfish reasons. So there's no character development there. Like, I don't understand what people are watching.
Well, at least because, notes. Remember... her facial expression slightly changed, and the music told me I have to feel different. I got to do what the music tells me, right? And then everybody else is smiling and looking concerned. So the music tells me no, you're wrong. You're toxic.
I don't understand.
Because, the music told me.
I don't either.
Literally, this show is literally the music tells you how to feel, and then you must love it.
We're sorry for going on and on.
Bah folks. Humbug.
We really are.
Bah humbug. I want the show to be better. Please make it watchable. Please make me not angry. I try to go into every single episode with an open mind. And it's gone from taking 10-15 minutes before I get mad to before the credits start. So yes, that's all. That's all I got to say on this myself.
You have a lot to say on this.
I agree with everything that's been said.
I'll be so happy to go back and watch Stargate this Christmas season than I will watching this.
I'm going to go back and watch TNG.
I'm looking forward to Stargate because I just want something fun, a little bit light, with some action that makes a little bit more sense. And,
fun,
I want more Christopher Judge.
Fun with good writing, a good tone, and doesn't talk down to its audience.
God, I miss Star Trek. I miss Star Trek so much.
I can't wait for more Lower Decks. Because, Picard season two ain't happening for a while.
It's making me more happy. If we want to speculate before we, break for the holidays here, I have a feeling that we're going to see Lower Decks before we see the other shows because of the way things went with the pandemic, because that show's produced, I think, in, is it William Street or one of those ones down in like Georgia that makes it or something? So it's something that can be made fairly quickly. And as much as I might have had issues with that show initially, it started to get better and better with each episode. And everything that we said that we didn't like about, what was her name in there? The main character from Lower Decks.
Shit, I can't remember.
Oh my god, what's her name? See, that's how memorable Gah. Everything is.
Gah.
It's Mariner, right? Mariner?
Yeah, Mariner, yes. Yeah.
Everything we didn't like about Mariner, that's like 3% of what we don't like about this show.
Yeah.
like what we don't like about her is that she doesn't fit with that show. And everything else seems to be fine. So yes, I would be very happy to see more of that. I guess we're going to probably break before, Christmas, and we'll come back because there's, 4 more left? 3 more left? 10, 11, 12, 13.
There's four more. It's so we'll 10, watch 11, those. 12, 13. Yeah.
So I guess we'll be back sometime mid-January to talk finale. And then who knows? They have four episodes to see if they can course correct.
And I ain't very optimistic.
But I have a feeling that, you know, we'll come into it with less vitriol than we did here, because I feel like that slight bump in quality that they made at the very beginning of the season was a fake out, and that's why we're even more pissed now. Now, like, I can't see how it could get worse. So I'm actually interested to see how it gets worse.
Anyhow, take us out, Mike.
All right, guys. Well, that has been this episode of Future Imperfect. As always, we do look forward to hearing from you. So if you want to reach us, you can reach me and Alex and Aaron at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Our social media is @thisweekingeek. That's how you reach all three of us if you happen to be in the Twitterverse. We also have a Facebook fan page @thisweekingeek. We are taking a winter hiatus. Me and Alex are currently working on our reviews of Cyberpunk 2077. Alex is playing on Stadia. He'll have first impressions, if not by the time this is up, fairly shortly. We will have a final impression review later in the month once I put significant time into it. As of this recording, I'm 50 hours in. I just started the main story because I've been horsing around exploring the world of Night City. We'll also be starting the Stargate actual play podcast sometime in late January or early February here on the show. So make sure you keep an eye out for that from Wyvern Gaming. That game system is powering the actual play podcast. So the backer kits just went out for that this past weekend. So yeah, that should be fairly one. You want to find out more information about that. If you Google Stargate SG-1 RPG, you can find out more about that. So hopefully you guys have a safe and happy holiday, however you decide to spend it. As always, listen to public health departments for direction on how to spend your holidays. If you do choose to gather, or if it's safe to do so, please be responsible. Please be careful. Please think of others. And of course, thank the frontline workers in your community whenever you possibly can. And if you can help out a family less fortunate, please do so as well. So for This Week in Geeks, Future Imperfect, starting in the great state of Colorado, we have been
Steve Megatron Phillips.
From the wilds of Michigan,
Aaron Pollier.
And of course, over in the next city, the sister city, in my opinion. That's Alex.
That's it.
That's it. I've been Mike the Birdman. And until next time, folks, live long and prosper.